Good to see all of you tonight. So glad that you're here to participate in our study of this, what I believe to be a most interesting period of Bible history as we're studying from the Old Testament kings, the kings in Judah and the kings in Israel. If you would open your Bibles to 2 Kings chapter 8 is where I want to begin a thought or two, and then we'll pick up and go on from there as we talk about some of the things related to Jehu, who was to be the king of Israel. In the New Testament, the writer tells us in Romans chapter 15 and verse 4 that the things that were written aforetime were written for our learning. You see the same thought presented in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 as illustrations from the history of Israel are offered, that these things happened to them by way of example. And so they were written for our admonition. And we can learn a great deal by looking into the Old Testament. Now, I understand that we're not under the Old Testament law. But as the New Testament writer indicates, we can learn some very valuable things from this Old Testament study. And I think especially so, as Chris mentioned in his prayer, as we think about the overall scheme of God to save man and the things that were necessary in the providence of God to bring that about. In this period of the kings, often people look at this and say, I don't like this study. I don't like to study from the Old Testament, or I don't like to study the period of the kings because the names are difficult and I get confused. And I've heard all of that before, and that all is true. The names are difficult to pronounce, and there is some confusion in remembering who is who and where they belong and so forth. But if we can keep that straight, even for just a little while, and learn the lesson, then we come away benefited from having studied this period of Old Testament history. And in 2 Kings chapter 8, I'm going to be reading a little bit about Jehoram, or as in verse 16 he is called, Joram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, Jehoshaphat being then king of Judah. Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, began to reign. Now, the difficulty of that involves two men named Jehoram, and how that at this point in history, both of them were reigning at the same time. Different men, one in the northern kingdom and one in the southern kingdom. And strangely enough, the one in the southern kingdom had married the sister of the one who reigned in the northern kingdom. Now, I grant you that gets complicated to try to remember who is who, but now what rule of thumb is there if you want to know which Jehoram you're reading about or which Ahaziah you're reading about? What's the rule of thumb? Who was their father? Yes, that's a good rule of thumb. There's yet another one.
What land they
ruled over, right? If they're referred to as the king of Israel, or if they're referred to as the king of Judah.
Although, all the way up until this time, those people were called Israelites, and now Israel are the bad people, and that one gives them trouble sometimes.
It does. And so we have to be established in the context to keep things running straight. Now, in our text there at verse 16, we've got Jehoram, or Joram, as he is referred to here, same man, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, reigning. That's this man over here. And then we read about Jehoram over here, who was the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and how he began to reign. Now, keeping that part, at least for now, straight in our minds, we left off our study Sunday morning down in about verse 20. And I want to read that, and I ask you to do some study on this as well. It says, in his days, Edom revolted from under the hand of Judah and made a king over themselves. Then Joram, now this is Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, passed over to Zoar, and all his chariots with him, and he rose up by night and smote the Edomites that compassed him about, and the captains of the chariots, and the people fled to their tents. Now, I just want for now you to underscore that the Edomites were defeated by the Israelites. Now, one of the things that we wanted to note, and I ask you to think about, is the prophet that was prophesying during this time. Let me get my notes where I can see my chart. If you would, please, turn to the book of Obadiah. Obadiah. I ask you to read this in our concluding remarks Sunday morning, because Obadiah is a prophet that speaks concerning the doom of, and I don't know what happened there, the doom of the Edomites. He's the prophet speaking of the doom of the Edomites. And so we want to think about what he has to say about them. Look, if you will, in the book of Obadiah, and I'll find something here that I can lay in this spot where I don't lose my place. There we go. Obadiah. In Obadiah chapter, or in Obadiah, not chapter, but verse 1, it says, "The visions of Obadiah, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, concerning Edom. We have heard tidings from Jehovah, and an ambassador is sent among the nations, saying, Arise ye, and let us rise up against her in battle." Now, if you'll drop down in the text, begin reading at verse 10. It says, "For the violence done unto thy brother Jacob, shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever in the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that strangers carried away his substance, and foreigners entered into his gates, and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast as one of them." Now, it's possible that Obadiah is referring to something that is yet future, but it's also possible that he has reference to the ultimate end of the Edomites. Now, question, as Obadiah prophesies concerning the end of Edom, what was the cause of this condemnation upon Edom? The prophet mentioned something. What did they do when Jerusalem was being destroyed? Now this jumps ahead in our study. What were they doing when Jerusalem was destroyed?
Well, I'm taking a guess here, but I think I read before that they were gloating about it.
All right. Look, if you will, back in the text. You're right. It says in verse 12, "But look not thou on the day of thy brother in the day of his disaster, and rejoice not over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction, neither speak proudly in the day of distress." Now there it gets to the heart of it. The Edomites, were they related to the children of Israel? Yes. What were those, was there any particular reason then for them to gloat about the destruction of the people of God? No. And Obadiah says that here's what's coming for you because you did that. Now, what we're reading about back in our text get back to it, 2 Kings chapter 8, there may be a reference to that inferred over here in Obadiah, the first verse, and then verses 10 through verse 14, when they revolt against Judah. But also you'll note, and I want to call your attention to this, that Libna revolted against Judah at the same time. You'll note in chapter 8, 2 Kings, in verse 22, it says, "So Edom revolted from under the hand of Judah unto this day. Then did Libna revolt at the same time, and the rest of the acts of Joram are and all that that he did are not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah. And Joram slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David, and Ahaziah his son reigned in his stead." Ahaziah, the son, get back here to my chart. Ahaziah, the son of Joram, or Jehoram, as he's referred to in other places, now becomes king. Who is Ahaziah's mother? Athaliah. That's right. The daughter of Ahab. Now what we want to note, and we're going to compare the accounts of the Kings and the Chronicles, is to see the influence that Athaliah had upon her son, Ahaziah. Now let's keep in mind that Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab, is that good or bad? That's really big time bad. Because Ahab was not a good king. He sets a new benchmark for evil among the people of God. And so Athaliah, his daughter, is really no better. Now, when she married Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, it makes you wonder just what kind of son they would have. Now, as you turn to the text in the Chronicles, if I can get on the right page, well, that's not where I want to be. Let me get back here to this chart. Right there. 2 Chronicles 22 is the passage I'm looking for. 2 Chronicles chapter 22. 2 Chronicles chapter 22. Let's pick up the reading at verse 1. It says, "And the inhabitants of Jerusalem made Ahaziah, his youngest son, king in his stead. For the band of men that came with the Arabians to the camp had slain all the eldest. So Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, reigned." In verse 2, it continues to discuss when he began to reign, or how long he reigned. 42 years old he was when he began to reign. But notice his mother's name was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri. Now, from what I understand, the word daughter here means descendant of. So, as you see on the chart, it would be the granddaughter, actually, of Omri. But in verse 3, it says that he walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother was his counselor to do wickedly. Athaliah taught her son to walk in the ways of the house of Ahab. Now, that tells you what kind of king you've got reigning now in Judah. Not a very good king, to say the least. Now, when we read concerning Ahaziah, there's a point I wanted to stress to you when we look at chapter 22, verse 1, that Ahaziah, the youngest son of Jehoram, reigns in the place of Jehoram when he dies. Read with me, if you will, beginning in verse 16 of 2 Chronicles chapter 21. 2 Chronicles chapter 21, verse 16. It says, "And Jehovah stirred up against Jehoram the spirit of the Philistines and the Arabians that are beside the Ethiopians, and they came up against Judah, and break into it, and carried away all the substance that was found in the king's house, and his sons also, and his wives, so that there was never a son left him, save Jehoahaz, the youngest of his sons." Now, who was Jehoahaz? Here's another name. Ahaziah. Yes, Ahaziah. Now, when we look at Ahaziah and see that he was the youngest son, and he was the only one that was spared of Jehoram. Question. What would have happened to the promise that God made unto David if Ahaziah had been killed along with his brothers? Would have been kept. Now, God had promised to David that one of your descendants will sit upon the throne, and your throne will be established forever. How close do we come right here to it becoming extinguished? Down to one. Now, I want you to note, this man was a wicked man, but his life is preserved for a while. Now, that brings us to another point that I want to talk with you about. As you continue the text, turn back to the account of the kings. 2 Kings chapter 8. 2 Kings chapter 8. Picking up the reading again in verse 25, 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 25. It says, in the 12th year of Joram, now this is Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, did Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, begin to reign. 22 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign. And he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri, the king of Israel. We've noted that that's the descendant of, the granddaughter. And he walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, and did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, as did the house of Ahab, for he was son-in-law of the house of Ahab. Does anybody have a different translation of verse 27 that you'd like to read? In particular regarding the expression son-in-law. Is everyone reading son-in-law in that passage? Okay, my understanding of the word that's translated there simply means related in marriage. Now, that would be a son-in-law, but it does not necessitate the direct son-in-law. Let's see who he is. He's not really the son-in-law of Ahab. Who is he? He's the grandson of Ahab. Now, what's his relationship to Ahab? We say a grandson, but it's related in marriage through the daughter of Athaliah, or the daughter of Ahab, Athaliah, you see. Now, as we look at the text once again, look at verse 28. It says, and he went with Jehoram, or Joram, the son of Ahab, to war against Ahaziel, king of Syria, at Ramoth-Gilead. And the Syrians wounded Joram, or Jehoram, and King Jehoram returned to be healed in Jezreel of the wounds which the Syrians had given him at Ramah, when he fought against Hazael, king of Syria. And Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, went down to see Joram, or Jehoram, the son of Ahab in Jezreel, because he was sick. Now, I want you to look at that and what that does. That brings these two kings together. Here we go. It brings these two kings together. One more. Well, I'm going to get there. Here we go. This is the one I want. Ahaziah, the king of Judah, went to visit Jehoram, king of Israel, in Jezreel, where he was recovering from his wounds that were inflicted by the Syrians. Now that puts these two kings, the one from the northern kingdom of Israel and the one from the southern kingdom of Judah, in Jezreel at the same time. Now, we might raise the question, why is that important? What had God said about the house of Ahab?
It was
going to be destroyed. That's right. Going to be destroyed. Now, in 1 Kings 21, we see fulfilled in 2 Kings 9, beginning in verse 7, who destroyed it? Jehu. That's right. Lynn and I were talking before services. It's hard to understand a whole lot that we know about Jehu. Kind of confusing. We know that he was selected by God to carry out the judgment of God upon the house of Ahab. And originally, you recall, as we discussed Sunday morning, that Elijah, follow me, Randy, Jenny, and all of you, make sure I say these names right. I got so confused Sunday morning, it's pathetic. But in 1 Kings chapter 18, we read of the contest between the prophets of Baal and the prophet of God, Elijah. And we know that as a result, Elijah ordered that the 250 prophets of Baal be killed. 450 prophets of Baal be killed. Alright? And Jezebel said that your life is going to be like the life of one of them by this time tomorrow. And we know that Elijah became so discouraged that he fled and hid himself in a cave. And God asked him, what are you doing here? And of course,
course, Elijah expressed his discouragement that he was really there to die. He said, they have forsaken you, they've torn down the altars, and they killed the prophets with the sword, and they seek my life to take it away. He said that twice. And God told him, there's something I have for you to do. And what was it God had for him to do? Three things. Number one,
anoint Jehu, king of Israel.
Anoint Jehu. All right, that's one of them. What else?
King of Syria, I can't remember which one.
All right, anoint the king of Syria, and that would be
Asia.
That's right. And number three, perhaps the most obvious one,
anoint Elisha.
That's right. He's going to be your successor. Now, when we follow the chain of events, we see that Hazael was indeed anointed as king of Israel.
Syria,
thank you. King of Syria, that's right. King of Syria. And Jehu was anointed to be king of Israel. And, of course, that was done very rapidly. And the prophet that did that got out very quickly. But we see purpose in all of this. What was it that the king of Syria did to Israel?
Warred against it.
Killed a whole lot of people. And, pardon me?
Constantly,
yes. There were several battles involved. And what was it that Elisha did? He anointed Jehu, eventually king of Israel. He finished what Elijah had started. But you recall that it was Elisha that had this interaction with Naaman and so forth in 2 Kings chapter 5. And did these many mighty works, as we discussed them from the charts. It was then Jehu that, as king, well, not yet, he's eventually to become the king of Israel. But it was Jehu that then went to Jezreel, where he killed Jehoram, the son of Ahab, and he killed Ahaziah, the grandson of Ahab. And there's one other thing that he did. He did. He marched on the city of Samaria, the capital of the northern 10 tribes, and they didn't want to be defeated, so he said, I want the sons of Ahab.
And didn't he go to where Jezebel was and said, if you go up to her council or wherever they were, if you want to be with me, throw her out the window and her lap, she died?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So we've got these three acts of Jehu as the executioner. And wasn't that what God said to Elijah? That what the king of Assyria doesn't do, Jehu will take care of. And what Jehu doesn't do, Elisha will take care of. So we've got these three involved in the judgment of God upon the nation of Israel. Now question, what was it that God had a long time ago told them when they came up out of the land of Egypt? That's right. Now, what is it that Israel, the northern 10 tribes, are doing? They're worshiping idols. And what's God doing about it? He's punishing them. Just exactly like he said. Just exactly like he said. Now, there's one thing that we didn't necessarily discuss in any detail, but if you'll drop down in the text of 2 Kings chapter 9. 2 Kings chapter 9. We see that this was the primary mission of Jehu, to carry out the prophecy of God that the house of Ahab would be destroyed. In 2 Kings chapter 9, beginning in verse 7, it says, And thou shalt smite the house of Ahab thy master, that I may avenge the blood of my servants, the prophets, and the blood of all the servants of Jehovah at the hand of Jezebel, for the whole house of Ahab shall perish, and I will cut off from Ahab every man child, and him that is shut up, and him that is left at large in Israel. And I will make the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha, the son of Ahijah.
And the dog shall eat Jezebel and the portion of Jezreel, and there shall be none to bury her. And he opened the door and fled. Now this is one of the sons of the prophets that bids these greetings and leaves very hurriedly. Now as you begin in verse 11, then Jehu came forth to the servants of his Lord, and one said unto him, is all well? Wherefore came this mad fellow to thee? And he said unto them, ye know the man and what his talk was. And they said, it is false. Tell us now. Do you find that interesting? These who want to know, what did that man say to you, Mr. Jehu? He said, well, you know how he is. Well, he's whatever he told you is wrong. But no, what he told him was right. In verse 14, so Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi, conspired against Joram. Now this is Jehoram, the king of Israel, the son of Ahab. And we see then in verse 14 as it continues, now Joram was keeping Ramoth-Gilead, he and all Israel, because Hazael, king of Syria. But King Jehoram, or Joram, was returned to be healed in Jezreel. And that we read from the account of the Chronicles. But in verse 17, it says, and the watchman was standing on the tower in Jezreel. And he spied the company of Jehu as he came, and said, I see a company. And Joram said, take a horseman and send to meet them. And he said, is it peace? Now how did Jehu receive him? Well, yeah, he said, turn behind me. In other words, you want to live, get back there. And so he...
Not anybody going to warn.
That's right. Yeah. And he sent out a second one. And what did he say to him? Same thing. In essence, you want to live, you get back here. And then he sent out, the watchman told him that the fellow that's driving... appears to be Jehu, the son of Nimshi, because of the way that he's driving. And then Jehoram said, make ready. And they made ready his chariot. And Jehoram, now this is the king of Israel, called Joram here. And Ahaziah, king of Judah, went out, each in his chariot. And they went out to meet Jehu and found him in the portion of Naboth the Jezreelite. Do you find that interesting at all? Here's the king of Israel and the king of Judah, and they're going out to meet Jehu. And of all places, where do they meet up? In Naboth's vineyard. And the text tells us, verse 22, it came to pass when Joram saw Jehu, he said, is it peace, Jehu? And he answered, what peace, so long as the whoredoms of thy mother Jezebel and her witchcrafts are so many? Would that make you angry? Randy's laughing. Yeah, Jehu's spoken very plain about Jehoram's mother. And then in verse 23, and Joram turned his hands and fled and said to Ahaziah, there is treachery, O Ahaziah. And Jehu drew his bow with his full strength and smote Joram between his arms, and the arrow went out at his heart, and he sunk down in his chariot. Then said Jehu to Bidkar, his captain, take up and cast him in the portion of the field of Naboth the Jezreelite. For remember, look at that, remember how that when I and thou rode together after Ahab his father, Jehovah laid this burden upon him. Surely I have seen yesterday the blood of Naboth and the blood of his sons, saith Jehovah, and I will requite thee in this plat, saith Jehovah. Now therefore, take and cast him into the plat of ground, according to the word of Jehovah. What happens to Jehu, the son of Ahab? Jehoram, thank you. What does Jehu do to him? He kills him. Where does he kill him?
In the heart.
Well, yeah, in the heart. He shoots him through the heart, but he kills him there in the vineyard of Naboth. You remember how he stole, essentially, Naboth's vineyard? And God said, this is going to happen to you because you don't do that.
And he did it anyway. He got Naboth's vineyard through old wicked Jezebel. And now he dies and he's buried in Naboth's vineyard where his old wicked daddy and mother had connived.
So it looks as if Jehu now has become a prophet. He's speaking to the Lord.
Well, God had spoken to him. Yeah. So he's revealing the message. Then in verse 27, when Ahaziah, the king of Judah, saw this, he fled by the way of the garden house. And Jehu followed after him and said, "Smite him also in the chariot." And they smote him at the ascent of Gur, which is by Abilam. And he fled to Megiddo and died there. So Ahaziah is now dead. But what about Jezebel over here? Where does Jehu go from here? To Jezreel. In verse 30, "And Jezebel heard of it, and she painted her eyes and attired her head and looked out at the window. And Jehu entered in at the gate and said, 'Is it peace, thou Zimri, thy master's murderer?' And he lifted up his face to the window and said, 'Who is on my side? Who?' And there looked out to him two or three eunuchs, and he said, 'Throw her down.' So they threw her down, and some of her blood was sprinkled on the wall and on the horses, and he trod her underfoot. And when he was come in and did eat and drink, he said, 'See now to this cursed woman and bury her, for she is a king's daughter.' And they went to bury her, but they found no more of her than the skull and the feet and the palms of her hands. Wherefore they came and told him, and he said, 'This is the word of the Lord, which he spake by his servant Elijah the Tishbite, saying, In the portion of Jezreel shall the dogs eat the flesh of Jezebel, and the body of Jezebel shall be as dung upon the face of the field in the portion of Jezreel, so that they shall not say, This is Jezebel.'" Now, that draws us a very vivid picture of what happened to Jezebel. She was scattered about so that no one could say, "This is the grave site of Jezebel." Gone. Now, that's what God said was going to happen to Jezebel. Who carried it out? Jehu did. And so we want to remember Jehu for his judgments that he pronounced upon the house of Ahab. Any questions or comments just here?
You said one. There's a difference in the lineage in Matthew. beginning of verse 7, Solomon was the father of Rehoboam, Rehoboam the father of Abijah, Abijah the father of Asa, Asa was the father of Jehoshaphat, Jehoshaphat the father of Joram, Joram the father of Uzziah, Uzziah was the father of Jotham, Jotham the father of Ahab. It goes, continues on. But in the lineage of Christ, we don't read about Uzziah here.
Okay.
Is Uzziah another name for Azariah?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I don't know. It may be another man completely. Now, on our chart over here, we don't have Uzziah. Yeah, we don't have him listed at all. But what you're saying is he might fit in right here.
Well, yeah, when the Philistines took all of his brothers and sisters, right?
Yeah, that's, killed them all.
Did it say they killed them? It just says they took them.
Well, I think it says that back over in the 9th chapter of 2 Kings, is it? No, it's further back. Or is it in the Chronicles? Let me look in the Chronicles right quick.
I believe Uzziah is further down. Most of the time it's in the genealogies, they're not.
Yeah. This may... Uzziah, or Uzziah, as we referred to him in our authority class, King of Judah, was a little further down the pike. And of course the expression begat, or the son of, very well means descendant of, not necessarily the direct son. That might be the implication here. Likely is, Randy.
So when we get like to 2 Kings 15, the Shallum, the son of Jabesh, began to reign in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And he reigned in the space of a month in Samaria. So that's the first passing glance for Uzziah of Judah, but it's only 3 chapters away, so it's possible that's...
Yeah. Skipping a generation or so.
Generation.
Yeah. That's very likely. In fact, very probable. Does that help? Randy?
Yeah, it's just, again, it's hard to keep everybody straight.
It is. I get confused, and I appreciate your all's help in trying to keep it straight. Okay? Get back to where I want to talk.
So after Ahaziah, the next king is Athaliah.
The next queen, yeah. Yeah, she usurps the throne. Yeah, the daughter of Ahab. And now you've got the daughter of Ahab sitting on the throne in Judah. And that's exactly where we want to begin this next series of charts. Now, I want to call your attention to this particular chart because of its relationship to your lesson book. Okay? We're now on the chart of the kings, part 2, in your lesson book. And you'll see that beginning on page 106. Page 106 of your lesson book. Now, the relevance of this chart, or these charts, I want you to follow them, because they tell us who's reigning where, and in what year's reign this fellow then becomes king in the opposing kingdom. And so we want to make note of that. Now, what do we have going on in the backdrop when we read about Athaliah and Jehu and then Joash and some of these kings that we're going to be talking about? We've got to talk a little bit about the Syrians, because we've still got to deal with Hazael, the king of Syria. Now, I want you to look at this chart briefly here, and we'll see a line of the kings. And here's Uzziah, Randy. I have it on this chart. But we've got them from Athaliah, Joash, Amaziah, Uzziah, Jotham, and so forth. And then here's Jehu when this is going on, and then we've got the lineage of the kings here. And, of course, we've got identified as Bad, Athaliah, and Ahaz. We'll talk more about him when we get down there to that. But I want to call your attention to 2 Kings chapter 9 one more time. Now, very quickly, because I didn't know exactly that I would finish the other lesson or where I would get in this one, so I put this chart in here twice. So we see what Jehu did. He killed Jehoram, the son of Ahab. He killed Ahaziah, the grandson of Ahab, the son of Jehoram and Athaliah. And he killed Jezebel and fulfilled the prophecy of Elijah, the prophet, regarding what would be done to the house of Ahab. Now, let's talk a little bit about Jehu's reign as king of Israel. And this brings us to the 10th chapter of the book of 2 Kings. The 10th chapter of the book of 2 Kings. Now, there's one thing that I want to inject. I think I have this on a chart. Let me look very quickly. I do, but it's on one down the pike a little further. I'm going to hold that thought to talk about it when I get to it. Jehu had some opportunities. In fact, he had some wonderful opportunities to turn Israel back to God. In 2 Kings chapter 10, drop down, if you will, please, in the text to verse 28, I think, will be the place that I want to begin
We've talked about most of the other material in this chapter already. But in verse 28, it says, "Thus Jehu destroyed Baal out of Israel." How did he do that? What did he pretend that he was going to do? Well, yeah, look at verse 18. Backing up chapter 10, verse 18. It says, "And Jehu gathered all the people together and said unto them, Ahab served Baal a little, but Jehu will serve him much." Now, if you just stop reading there, what do you think Jehu's about to do? He's going to be worse than Ahab. But you didn't stop reading there, did you? So as you keep on reading, it says, "Now therefore call unto me all the prophets of Baal, all his worshipers, and all his priests. Let none be wanting, for I have a great sacrifice to do to Baal. Whatsoever shall be wanting, he shall not live," or whosoever. But Jehu did it subtly, to the intent that he might destroy the worshipers of Baal. Now, what's Jehu said I'm going to do? You think Ahab was a worshiper of Baal? I am really going to worship Baal. I've got a great sacrifice that I want to do. You bring everybody that's associated with the worship of Baal together, and I'll make this great sacrifice. Now, Jehu's king of Israel. And when the king says, "I'm going to make a great sacrifice," you think of glory and splendor, don't you? He's not going to spare any expense. Now that would be the impression you would get. So you would go out here and gather up all the prophets of Baal and all the priests of Baal and all the people that worship Baal and tell them about what King Jehu's, as we would say in Kentucky, fixing to do. But now when they all came together, instead of throwing a big festive occasion, what did Jehu do?
I thought it was really interesting that he clothed those priests or prophets of Baal in specific clothing so that they'd be easier to pick out.
In verse 25 it says, "It came to pass, as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, that Jehu said to the guard and to the captains, Go in and slay them. Let none come forth." Slay them all. Yes, Lauren?
I noticed there's no Jews in here, and he separated the people that believed in God from that group.
Very good, yes. Bring in the worshipers of Baal.
And exclude. Make sure there's none in.
That's right.
In fact, didn't he double check at the end before he ordered the soldiers to come in?
In verse 23, yes, thank you. "And Jehu went and Jonadab, the son of Rechab, into the house of Baal, and he said unto the worshippers of Baal, Search and look that there be here with you none of the servants of Jehovah, but the worshippers of Baal only." That's right. So he orders that they all be killed. Now, you would think from that that he had tremendous opportunity to turn the people of Israel back to the Lord. Now, think about what he's done. He's killed Jehoram, the son of Ahab. He's killed Ahaziah, the grandson of Ahab. He's killed Jezebel, the wicked wife of Ahab. And now he's killed all the prophets and all the worshipers of Baal. You would think he's cleaning house.
That was
insane. Yeah. But look, if you will, at verse 29. It says, "Howbeit from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel to sin, Jehu departed not from after them, to wit the golden calves that were in Bethel and that were in Dan. And Jehovah said unto Jehu, Because thou hast done well in executing that which is right in mine eyes, and have done unto the house of Ahab according to all that was in my generation, or in my heart, thy sons of the fourth generation shall sit on the throne of Israel. But Jehu took no heed to walk in the law of Jehovah, the God of Israel, with all his heart. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, wherewith he made Israel sin." What did Jehu continue to do?
Worship
calves. And he's gotten rid of Baal worship, at least for now. But he's maintained
the worship of the golden calves. And you find that interesting. What an opportunity. But he sure messed that up. And so when God told Israel way back when, in Deuteronomy chapter 4, when Moses led the children of Israel up out of the land of Egypt, that you worship and serve God, He'll bless you. If you don't, what's going to happen? He'll destroy you. Yes.
And in verse 30, it says, the Lord said to Jacob, because you've done well in executing what is right in my eyes, and have done to the house of Ahab according to all that was in my heart, your sons of the fourth generation shall sit on the throne of Israel. The Lord spoke directly to him.
Yes, I noticed that. Isn't that incredible? Lord talking to this man.
He still turned.
He still turned. He would not listen. The wording, he departed not from the sins of Jeroboam. He would not. He took no heed. Wouldn't listen.
The only God that actually spoke to
him. Yeah. And he would not listen.
None of the other ones.
He wouldn't listen. Now, God was not happy with that. And what was it that Moses told them way back when? You'll be blessed if you do what God said. But if you begin to worship idols, God's going to take this land away from you. And that's precisely what Joshua said to them in Joshua chapter 23, beginning in verse 16, 14 through 16. David and then Chris.
Let's look at the consistency all the way through the Bible. And I was just wondering, jumping way ahead up there in Matthew chapter 13, that talks about the tares.
Okay.
That follows the same line of thinking. But
well, yes, you do what God says, you'll be blessed, and if you don't, then you won't. Now, that's just how simple it is. I'm sorry, Chris, and then to Lynn.
You said that his fourth generation would sit on the throne. So his fifth generation, first captivity?
I'll have to think about that. I don't know if it was the beginning of captivity or if it was the ending of his dynasty. I believe it was the ending of his dynasty. Let me look right quick. Yes, it was the ending of his dynasty. We don't have the captivity yet. That's not until about 722. Okay? But it was the ending of his dynasty.
I think it's interesting how that other generations pay for someone else's estates.
That's right. That's right. That's the second one.
Yes.
Okay. All right, next time I want you to read beginning in 2 Kings chapter 10. Here, as you see on the board, verse 20 or 32, and we want to see what Haziel does. This idea of you worship other gods and I'll destroy you out of the land. Israel starts losing land to the king of Syria. And you might expect that, wouldn't you? Okay.